Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and I'd like to welcome you all to today's call, the second fiscal quarter 2020 earnings conference call. And all participants' lines are in a listen-only mode, and after the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. I would now like to turn our call over to your speaker today, Mr. Matthew Smith. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Ryan. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will be also furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions, the duration and severity of the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on the global economy, and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2019, filed on December 16, 2019, and our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 20 on February 18, 2020. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Shuky Sheffer, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Degim, Joint Chief Financial and Operating Officer. And with that, I'll turn it over to Shuky.
Thank you, Matt. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us on the call today, and I sincerely hope that you and your loved ones are safe and well at this difficult time in the world. I'm proud of our second fiscal quarter performance, especially considering the global health and economic crisis created by the COVID-19 pandemic. We delivered a record high revenue that was slightly above the midpoint of our guidance, adjusting for foreign currency headwinds. We maintained stable profitability with solid free cash flow generation, and we ended Q2 with a strong balance sheet and enough liquidity to support our ongoing business needs and long-term investment. Regarding our response to the COVID-19 pandemic, we demonstrated incredible execution as we adapted our global operations to ensure business continuity and the health and well-being of our global workforce, our customers, and their respective families. From our vantage point in Southeast Asia, Amdocs among the first in our industry to proactively address the business impact and the evolving crisis. We acted decisively to communicate precautionary measures and employee travel restrictions throughout the region and parts of Europe. And in early February, we were one of the first companies to announce our withdrawal for GSMA Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. By mid-March, almost 100% of our 25,000 employees were equipped to securely work from home, remotely operating the mission-critical system required to keep our customer operations running seamlessly across 85 countries. For the sole number of essential employees required to be on-premise at customer and Amdocs sites, we took a proper step to ensure their safety. To smoothly transition Amdocs global development, project delivery, and managed service operation with our short-term productivity intact, it is not trivial. We successfully completed an incredible 20 go-lives in March, another 26 in April, using new methodologies, best-in-class practices, and various collaboration and deployment tools to meet the required project's goals. At the same time, we supported the business continuity for our customers with remote solutions to address pain points in billing and collection, contact center and retail store support, and radio optimization. Our support for the community was also another pillar of our response. We donated medical masks, medical supplies, protective equipment, life-saving machines, and food for the needy. With the leadership of our CSR team, we also started a digital assistant call center operated by Endless Volunteers to assist elderly and other population who are socially and digitally disconnected and unable to operate a video call. Overall, I believe our response to COVID-19 highlights the vital role of Amdocs play in the communication ecosystem in our ability to effectively share, collaborate, and communicate internally and with service providers and partners. I would like to take a moment to warmly thank our employees for their professionalism, commitment, and ability to quickly adapt to the new circumstances. I would also like to say that I'm proud and of the dependability we showed our customer who took heroic steps to ensure essential services for everyone at this critical time. I will talk about COVID-19 in respect to our outlook later in the call, but first let me provide a review of our second quarter activities on a regional basis. Beginning with North America, we delivered a record quarter that included the steady ramp-up of our new managed services agreement at AT&T, remote operational management system support to assist COVID-19 response at Cricket, the live deployment of Amdocs data and intelligence systems on Google Cloud at Altice USA, and continuous progress in the successful deployment of the new digital customer self-care and commerce capabilities at US Cellular and our customer experience portfolio to help monetizing, billing, and simplify operation of Rogers. Additionally, we are delighted to report a pivotal win at a major new logo, which has selected Amdocs Catalog One on AWS Cloud to rapidly launch new services across its customer base, including 5G wireless, wireline, and enterprise. We believe this award reflects the strength of our next generation offering and provides us with an important foothold for which to demonstrate the long-term value proposition Amdocs can bring as an innovative and trusted partner. Our media offering also gained further traction in Q2. We signed a multi-year under which Amdocs Media's cloud-based platform will provide the content aggregation, processing, compliance, and delivery services to support the video platform of a leading Canadian operator. Meanwhile, Amdocs Media Market One platform is providing T-Mobile US with an easy way to onboard OTT partners, such as innovative new entrant Quibi, making them quickly available to T-Mobile's flagship Magenta and One Family Plan customers. To comment briefly on T-Mobile and Sprint, we have developed a deep relationship with these service providers over many years, and both are top 10 customers of Amdocs today. Over the last few years, we have supported T-Mobile growth strategies and more recently the new video strategy in 5G network planning and deployment. While at Sprint, we have delivered Digital One to modernize and accelerate Sprint's digital transformation. As T-Mobile merger with Sprint is now complete, we are working hard to demonstrate that we have the right credentials to be the main partner for the new T-Mobile after expected launch later in the summer. Having said that, there is no guarantee of new awards, and we assume that future opportunities may take several quarters to materialize within the current economic environment. Overall, we continue to see many long-term growth opportunities in North America, but we do expect sequential trends to weaken in the fiscal second half, given the prevailing level of economic uncertainty. Moving to Europe, underlying activity levels were healthy, adjusting for foreign currency headwind and normal business fluctuation. I can report that recent projects like Vodafone Germany and Orange Spain are ramping up as planned, albeit using remote capabilities. We are also helping our European communication media customer adapt their business to the COVID-19 environment. For instance, we have expanded our managed services deal with EE in the UK to implement secure remote digital engagement for its customer alongside partner Lytico, enabling EE's customers to complete sales cycle from the safety of the comfort of their home. Additionally, as people stay home during the COVID-19 lockdown and use their broadband and TV services more, we have seen double-digit increase in Virgin Media Store and Virgin Movies activity as supported by Vubiquity. As a final highlight, we expanded our collaboration with Liberty Global in Q2 to provide seamless access on multiple devices using our unified digital identity solution, which will be delivered on the cloud to serve Liberty's pan-European group of operators. Turning to the rest of the world, we deliver an impressive quarter of execution, adjusting for foreign currency movement and normal business fluctuation. Our year two activities included a successful go-live of MarketOne on the cloud at AT&T Mexico, as well as several other notable deliverables. For instance, we deployed our entire customer experience suite on AWS Cloud in a DevOps delivery model as part of a digital transformation we are supporting for a leading content and consumer company in Southeast Asia. Despite the considerable limitation posed by the COVID-19 pandemic, we successfully collaborate with the customer and the Amdocs project team, which involved hundreds of people in several countries, to resulting to go live. It was achieved on time and budget with nearly all our employees working securely and effectively from the remoteness of their home. At Vodafone Idea in India, we led a multi-vendor effort to migrate large section of their subscriber base in record time. Despite all challenges at the global pandemic, while Excel Axiata in Indonesia, we delivered the first set of new capabilities as part of our multi-year managed digital transformation project. In terms of new wins, Globe in the Philippines selected our leading cloud-native CatalogOne and DigitalOne solution to transform its enterprise operation under a multi-year managed services agreement. Additionally, we continue to expand Amdocs Media and the rest of the world. Vubiquity has chosen to provide Airtel Africa with the premium media content and curation across multiple countries on Microsoft Azure. Vubiquity also reached a three-year agreement with Entel, the Uruguay state-owned operator, for the provision of content services. This includes the licenses, processing, marketing, and delivery of TiVo titles and SVOD movies to Entel's more than 1 million household subscribers. Overall, I am pleased with our performance across all regions in the second quarter and the essential support we provide to the world's largest communication and media companies. However, the continuing COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted global economic activity on an unprecedented scale, and there is very little clarity as to when the economy can recover and what it will look when it does. With respect to our outlook for the fiscal year, we are providing our current expectation based on information we have to date, but remind you that we are in time of great uncertainty regarding the spread of severity of the COVID-19 pandemic and its adverse effect on the global economy remains. With these factors in mind, let me take a moment to talk about our current market position, our forward strategy and financial expectation for the full fiscal year. First, we believe Amdocs is the right solution, ready to support our customer long-term investment in digital modernization, 5G network deployment and monetization, system migration to the cloud, and launching media and entertainment offering. At the same time, we plan to tailor and accelerate certain R&D investments in order to bring the innovation our customer will need to succeed in the post-COVID-19 environment. Second, while there have been no project cancellation due to the COVID-19 pandemic, there was some slippage in the deal pipeline during March as our customer prioritized their own business continuity plans. I'm encouraged to report that some of these deals have already closed in Q3, while others are progressing through the deal sales process. Nevertheless, the slower than expected pace of pipeline conversion is impacting our revenue growth outlook for the full fiscal year 2020. Third, we have moved quickly to align our cost structure to the reality of the current business environment, and we are expected to maintain operating margin in the fiscal second half at similar level to the last couple of quarters. Fourth, we remain committed to a proactive and disciplined allocation of capital. We are on track to meet our normalized free cash flow targets for the full fiscal year, and we have enough liquidity to support our ongoing business needs and long-term organic growth investment. Additionally, we continue to see M&A as a strategic vehicle for our long-term growth, possibly using debt where appropriate. To wrap up, we expect to generate positive revenue and earning growth at the midpoint for full year guidance, even though the COVID-19 pandemic is negatively impacting our physical second half. The visibility for our 12-month backlog lends support to our outlook, and we believe we have the right mix of product offerings and employee talent to ensure we emerge from this crisis stronger than before and in a position to generate future growth. With that, let me turn the call to Tamar for remarks.
Thank you, Shuki. Second fiscal quarter revenue of $1.05 billion was slightly above the midpoint of our expectation of $1.035 billion and $1.075 billion. excluding for negative foreign currency impact of approximately $8 million relative to guidance rates. On a reported basis, revenue performance included the negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $6 million relative to the first fiscal quarter of 2020. Due to our strong win momentum entering the quarter and the disciplined execution we have delivered to our customers, we are pleased to have met all our revenue expectations while adjusting our global operations in response to COVID-19 outbreak. On a year-over-year basis, our second quarter revenue grew by 2.8% as reported and 3.7% in constant currency. Our second fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.2%, above the midpoint of our long-term target range of 16.5% to 17.5%, and consistent with our guidance. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $2.3 million in Q2. Foreign currency fluctuations in the quarter were higher than normal, and our hedging program was effective in mitigating for most of the impact on the bottom line. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. We remind you that our foreign currency hedging program is designed to protect our profitability and free cash flow generation rather than revenue, and we are pleased that this approach has proven effective through the volatile currency markets of the second quarter. Diluted GAAP EPS was $1.08 in Q2, above the midpoint of our guidance range of $1.03 to $1.09. As anticipated, our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 18.3% in the second fiscal quarter was above the high end of our annual target range of 13 to 17%. Diluted GAAP EPS was 94 cents for the second fiscal quarter, above our guidance range of 82 to 90 cents. Free cash flow was $57 million in Q2. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $103 million, less $46 million in net capital expenditures and other, and includes an annual cash bonus payment in January for the prior fiscal year 2019, consistent with our guidance expectations of last quarter. Normalized free cash flow was $76 million in the second fiscal quarter, which is on track with our original expectation for roughly a third of the annual cash flow in the first half of the fiscal year. Please refer to the reconciliation table provided in our Q2 earnings release for an explanation of the difference between normalized and reported free cash flow in the quarter and for past periods. DSO of 82 days decreased by 4 days year-over-year and by 6 days as compared to the prior fiscal quarter. We remind you that DSO may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. The sequential gap between unbilled receivables and deferred revenue narrowed by $18 million as compared to the first fiscal quarter of 2020, reflecting a decrease in total unbilled receivable of $13 million and an increase in total deferred revenue, both short and long term, of $5 million. Relative to a year ago, the gap increased by $36 million. Changes in this gap are primarily due to the timing of contract-specific milestones relating to the transformation project we are delivering for our customers. Moving forward, you should expect unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue to fluctuate from quarter to quarter in line with normal business activities. Moving on, our 12-month backlog was $3.46 billion at the end of the second fiscal quarter and relatively flat compared to the prior quarter on a constant currency basis. 12-month backlog was down $60 million sequentially as reported, but up 2.1% compared to a year ago. As a reminder, we believe our 12-month backlog continues to serve as a good leading indicator of our forward-looking revenue. I am pleased to report that revenue from managed services arrangements that generate typically high level of recurring revenue streams had a record quarter in Q2, comprising 58% of total revenue. That reflects high renewal rates, the growing adoption of our managed transformation model, and the continued expansion of activities within existing managed services customers. Our cash balance at the end of second fiscal quarter was approximately $763 million. Given the uncertain magnitude of duration of the COVID-19 economic crisis, we took the precaution to increase our cash balance by drawing down $350 million in Q2, including $300 million under our $500 million revolving credit facility and a further short-term bank loans. For the fiscal third quarter to date, we have taken an additional $100 million in short-term bank loans, bringing total short-term borrowings to $450 million. We remain comfortable with our balance sheet and believe we have ample net cash and liquidity to support our ongoing business needs, organic growth investments, and cash returns to shareholders, including our quarterly dividend program. Additionally, we are committed to maintaining our investment-grade credit rating. During the second fiscal quarter, we repurchased $120 million of our ordinary shares under our current authorization, more than half of which was executed during the extreme share market volatility of March. As of March 31st, we had more than $800 million of authorized capacity for share repurchases with no stated expiration date, which we will execute at the company's discretion going forward. Now, turning to the outlook, we have taken a wider than normal range with respect to our revenue guidance for the third fiscal quarter of fiscal 2020 and the full fiscal year of 2020, which we believe is appropriate given the prevailing level of macroeconomic and business uncertainty surrounding the magnitude and duration of the COVID-19 pandemic. The midpoint of our revenue guidance for Q3 and the full fiscal year range reflects what we consider to be the most likely outcomes based on the information we have as of today, but we cannot predict all possible scenarios. And we remind you that our outlook may be impacted materially as our customers continue to evaluate their strategic business priorities and future pace of investment. With that said, we expect revenue for the third fiscal quarter of 2020 to be within a range of $990 to $1.04 billion. Embedded with our Q3 revenue guidance, we anticipate a sequential negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $8 million as compared to fiscal second quarter. Regarding the full fiscal year 2020, we expect to deliver total revenue growth in the range of roughly 0.5 percentage point to 3.5 percentage point year over year on constant currency basis, the midpoint of which is approximately 200 basis points lower than that of our previous expectation of 2.5 to 5.5 year over year. On a reported basis, we now expect fully revenue growth in the range of -0.5% to +2.5% as compared with a range of +2.5 to 5.5 previously. The new outlook anticipates a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately 1% year over year as compared to an immaterial amount expected previously. We anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin will remain at or above the midpoint of our unchanged annual target range of 16.5% to 17.5% in the fiscal second half, and similar to the levels of the last couple of quarters. While we are faced with revenue headwinds resulting from the COVID-19 pandemic, we are focused on protecting our profitability while balancing between our short-term customer commitments, operational excellence, and our employee well-being. At the same time, we are investing in our business to ensure we emerge from this crisis with even stronger customer relationship, high levels of employee engagement, and a superior offering that is relevant to the needs of the market. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to remain within the same target range of 13 to 17% for the full fiscal year 2020. We expect the third fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of $1 to $1.08. With respect to Q3, we expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be at the higher end of our annual target range of 13 to 17%. Our third fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 134 million shares. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the third fiscal quarter as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year, we now expect to deliver diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 0 to 4% year over year, as compared to a prior expectation of 3 to 7%. Additionally, our full year EPS outlook incorporates our expected repurchase activity over the year. We continue to expect normalized free cash flow for the year 2020 of approximately $500 million. We continue to expect reported free cash flow for the fiscal year 2020 to be approximately $400 million. which includes anticipated capital expenditure of up to $90 million in relation to the development of our new campus in Israel and other items. Regarding our capital allocation plans, we remain committed to the quarterly dividend as an important part of the total return we expect to provide to our shareholders. And together with our share repurchase activity, we expect to return a majority of our normalized free cash flow in fiscal 2020. With that said, we will continue to assess the deployment of capital carefully in the fiscal second half, having regard to the status of COVID-19 pandemic, the outlook for M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. To conclude my financial comments, we expect to deliver modest top-line growth as well as a total shareholder return of approximately 4% for the full fiscal year 2020, which includes the 2% midpoint of our expected non-GAAP earnings per share and our 2% dividend yield, and that's despite the toughest of economic times. With that, we can turn it back to the operator, and we're happy to take your questions.
Yes, of course. At this time, if there are any questions on the line, you could press star and the number one for any questions. Again, star one. And we do already have some questions on the line, so we'll start with our first question from the line of Ashwin Shirvaikar from Citi.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Shruti. Hi, Tamar. Good to hear your voices. Hope you're well.
I guess
I wanted to start by asking how your clients are adapting to this new environment. It seems as though new signings are coming back, so maybe the sales process is working, but can you talk about ramps of existing deals? Can you talk about your current conversations? I would think digital transformation is now more important than ever before. Any other points to consider? Are they pushing out payments? Are there any differences versus telecom versus media, things like that?
Hi. So I think from sales perspective, we see two type of activities. There were the activities that we engaged prior to the COVID-19. As Anman mentioned, there was a bit some slowdown during the March timeframe, and we expect and want to see recovery in Q3. We see some signing of some of these deals at the beginning of Q3. We hope to be able to continue this momentum. From offering perspective, we see again two type of offering. We continue all the offering that Amdocs is coming from, 5G monetization, as you mentioned, digital transformation, etc. But we also coming with a new ideas and innovation to support what we believe is a reflection of the COVID-19 pain points. Obviously, we are trying to find solution for the fact that the retail store will close. So how we can elevate the self-care and the e-commerce activities. Obviously, closing the call center or moving to call center to work from home. This is another thing that we are coming with, innovative solution to support our customer that have to move thousands and thousands of customer service operators to work from home. How to monetize the network and how to optimize the network in time like this. So this is another area we are coming with some innovation solution to support our customer. For Q2, I cannot tell you that we have seen a pressure regarding collection. Actually, we had a good, very decent collection quarter. I cannot tell you that this will be always the case, but so far, I think the value of the services, the importance of the services, the mission critical services we deliver, I think that, as I mentioned, we've done an exceptional good job in this quarter and also in April. So far, we did not see this pressure.
Ashwin, one point maybe to add is on the media side, we're very pleased with the continued wins momentum all over the world, and you've seen some of the examples we shared during the prepared remarks with many new logos, a lot of service providers around the world launching OTT services. We're seeing the demand for the content management and processing that we provide, as well as things like seamless identity management and onboarding of new consumer. Market One has been a very successful platform, both with T-Mobile that launched already new partners, as well as AT&T Mexico. So we're very pleased with the momentum over there.
Got it. Thank you. And then the second question really is about cost flexibility as you think about the current environment. You know, and that's both a question about the, you know, ability to cut costs or control costs as well as the willingness, you know, given that you have, you know, fairly large number of transformational deals going on and so on and so forth. Can you talk about your cost flexibility?
Sure. So what we are seeing is that obviously we need to plan for multiple scenarios given the uncertainty. So what we're trying to do is to build, you know, cost contingency initiatives that are trying to factor in different things that can happen, both in terms of ramp up, ramp down. As you know, we have quite a robust delivery model that is a global one, and as a matter of regular business, we need all the time to be able to reallocate resources between activities that are accelerating in certain customers versus others that are naturally ramping down. So it's a muscle in the company in a way that is very active, and even more so, of course, in times like that. We are continuing to be very cautious on talent acquisition these days. While we are hiring many employees, and by the way, virtually onboarding hundreds of employees, in different places in the world, we are very selective in where we decide to recruit. At the same time, we continue to balance the different activities that we do with all kinds of initiatives that are least harmful to the employees and the productivity and the commitments we can do for our customers. And by doing that, so far, we managed to do a good job in protecting the margin, plus we have things in our contingency plans to address any further pressure if one will come. So that's why we came out with the message. We believe that in the second half of the year, while we're experiencing some pressure on the top line, we can protect the margin level we've seen in the last couple of quarters.
And we do have more questions on the line. And just to our questioners, a reminder, please do limit yourself to one question plus one follow-up question. Our next question comes from the line of Jackson Ader from JP Morgan.
Thanks. Good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Collections seemed strong in the quarter, and that runs counter to, I think, what we would have expected. And so just curious about the collections activity in the quarter, and then also, have you had any customers maybe that you've hit invoicing milestones on their projects and they've asked for either deferrals or leniency in payment terms?
So I think, Jackson, it's a good point because naturally collecting money is never an easy thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants the cash in their bank account, and definitely in times like that. But at the same time, we've been very focused on making sure that, A, we invoice for all the milestones that we've hit, and B, collect the money that is well-deserved after we meet those milestones. And it's an ongoing discussion with customers. So yes, naturally there are difficulties that come with the situation. By the way, some of them even logistical difficulties, like how do people access the bank accounts in countries in which they pay by checks? I know it's hard to believe that in some countries this is still the case, but it is. So all the way from this kind of, we'll call it more logistical challenges that we have to overcome to customers, dialogue around can we move the payment date, etc. So it's an ongoing discussion we have with customers. I think that we are managing that in an effective way. Our customers understand how well we are executing to the commitments we have, and the other way around, we expect to be paid on time.
Okay. And then actually that's a nice segue into my follow-up, which was, is there any more color maybe that you could provide on when you were talking about the just logistical hang-ups of getting paid? What about the logistical hang-ups that go with some of your transformation or project-oriented milestones? Are there milestones that Amdocs cannot physically hit during this time period that would preclude you from being able to recognize revenue from a certain project because of COVID-19?
The answer is a straight no. I think that we proved during February, March, and during April that we are able to deliver all milestones. This is what I said in the script, that we are very proud and how effectively we moved to work completely virtual, leveraging the best-in-class methodologies, collaboration tools. We are working with Vodafone Germany on continuation, which I think one of the biggest transformation in the world, everything in a virtual way from probably 3 to 4 countries, the same in Orange, Spain, the same in others. So I think that we were able to adopt very, very fast to deploy all this production milestone. And as I mentioned, in Southeast Asia, we moved one of the operators in 2 weekends to the whole system to the cloud. Everything was supported remotely from our workforce in India, in Israel, in the United States, in the Philippines, etc. So I can tell you with the great confidence that we adopt exceptionally well to this environment, and I don't see any reason that we continue to deploy. I think between March and June together, we deployed 15 milestone to production. So it's amazing.
March and April.
You're sorry?
March and April.
So the answer is that I don't see any reason we will continue to deliver.
I think just to add on that, it requires obviously a lot of joint effort with our customers and a lot of open dialogue about how to make it happen, which obviously is the case in terms of the joint interest of both parties. And just an incredible commitment of our workforce. Our employees have been wonderful in coping with the whole move in a very fast pace to this working from home mode. And very small quantity of employees that are essential to be on customer or our own
data
site,
center, yeah.
Like data center support, things like that, have been also very flexible in agreeing to do the task. And obviously we made all of that while making sure they are very safe and controlled clean environments.
And we do have more questions on the line. Our next question comes from the line of Hugh Cunningham from OPCO.
Okay. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Regarding the new campus in Israel, has the COVID-19 lockdown impacted the progress of work there? And looking forward, do you expect any impact on the work on the new campus?
I can start and Tamar will complete. I can tell you that the whole arrangement we have in the campus is we have a lot of flexibility. We made sure that we have flexibility with all the contractors. We are evaluating what we call the next generation of way of working. It's going to continue to be balanced between working from the office. There are certain things that the only way to do in the highest productivity is from the office. And definitely we see that there are more opportunities to work from home. So this is, I think, we have flexibility. Additionally, in the campus, we move from pretty much from lease to own. And definitely when you own the campus, you have much more flexibility to balance the workforce working for the campus as much as you need, rather than when you sign a long-term leasing deal with a landlord that usually and typically don't have so much flexibility. So I believe we build the right flexibility to adjust to the needs that we will need. Tamar, you want
and
to
we're continuing on time. Actually, the construction sector in Israel has been excluded as an essential sector, so work continued while there were limitations on other activities in country. The construction continued as planned.
Okay, and so the cash flow you've laid out, reemphasized, there's no expectation, and that's going to change.
Yeah, again, we're saying up to 90 because obviously we want to take a cautious view on the number we're giving you, and if we can delay some of these payments, that will be good. I think you agree with me. So I think that overall, in terms of the expectation, it will definitely not be more than the 90 that we expect for the year. Maybe some of it will shift a bit to next year.
And at this time, if there are any more questions on the telephone line, you can press star, the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star, and the number one. We do have a question that came in from the line of Charlie Arklett from Baird.
Hey, thanks for taking the question. This is Charlie Ehrlich on for Will Power. I'm wondering if I can ask a question on the balance sheet. Amdocs has always had a really strong balance sheet, so I'm wondering, you know, what the uses and maybe the reason and timing around the $350 million you guys raised this quarter. And then also wanted to clarify that I heard correctly that you raised another $100 million in Q3.
So you're right, we have a strong balance sheet, and we are definitely laying down and giving you full transparency about how we are planning to use the money. You know, what we said is the majority of the free cash flow we will generate, the normalized free cash flow will be returned to shareholders. So as you can understand, on top of that, we are funding the build-up of the campus that we just touched. And again, that was planned. So the main reason we drew the money was just to be cautious. You know, given these kind of circumstances and the economic pressure coming with the COVID-19 pandemic, we know liquidity is a scarce asset. We prefer this liquidity will be in our bank account rather than on the other side. So that's the main reason. We're not trying to single here any kind of a mega move that was not planned before, just to be on the safe side.
Great. Yeah, that makes sense. And then I might have missed
and
it.
On the 100, just to be sorry, I did respond to the other part of your question. Yes, we did draw additional 100 during the beginning of Q3 on top of the 350. So in total, we have already borrowing as of now of 450.
Great. Yeah, thanks. And then just my last question on AT&T. I'm sorry if I missed this, but did you guys call anything out in the beginning of the call on AT&T specifically, if there's any changes to their, you know, discretionary spending patterns or trends or any conversations you're having with them, either positive or negative, you know, given the environment?
The comment that I had regarding AT&T that we are happy with the execution of the large managed service agreement that we've signed with them in Q4 last year. So the execution of this contract started already and is doing well. Additionally, we are talking with them and on different ideas and innovation that can be relevant for COVID-19 situation and more.
At this time, we do have one more question in the queue. This is a follow-up from the line of Jackson Adder from J.P. Morgan.
Hey, guys. Sorry, just one quick follow-up on gross margin. I know, Tamar, you said you expect operating margin to be roughly in line with the first half. What should we be expecting with gross margin, if you can give us some additional color there?
Jackson, usually we are not guiding or, to be honest, managing our activities to the gross margin level because we do want to keep flexibility between primarily, you know, execution of delivery. Sometimes we would like to accelerate R&D. For example, now one of the ideas that we have looking on different opportunities in the market is to see where we can slightly accelerate R&D activities. So the shift between margin on the gross margin level and operating margin is something that we may see, not in a material way, but that's why we're very focused on managing and guiding also on the operating margin level.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much.
And at this time, there are no further questions on the line. I will now turn it back over to our speaker, Matt.
Thanks, Ryan, and thanks very much, everyone, for joining our call this evening and for your interest in Amdocs. We do look forward to hearing from you in the coming days. If you do have any additional questions, just give us a call at the Investor Relations Group. And with that, stay fit and wealthy, fat and healthy, and have a great evening. Thanks.
And this does conclude today's call. You may all now disconnect. Speakers, please hold the lines.